We're queer.
We're geeks.
We're queeks.
Superheroes, Star Wars,
Broadway, Drag Race.
So if you're super gay,
super nerdy,
or anything in between, listen to Queeks today.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
And find us on Instagram at Queeks Podcast.
Welcome to the Astroholic Explains,
a podcast where we try to explain the universe's greatest mysteries with fictional stories, Q&As, and interviews.
Join Dr. Alfredo Carpinetti, the self-styled astroholic,
and Chris, my partner in life and in science.
Featuring experts and brilliant voice actors, join us in a light-hearted journey of discovery. Welcome back to a brand new series. It's really good to be back.
Welcome back.
So, shall we dive straight into a brand new question for a brand new series?
Absolutely. I've been waiting for this for a very long time.
Excellent.
Well, 6 months.
It's gone really fast.
Yeah.
Really fast. But we won't keep you waiting any longer. So, today's first question comes from the lovely neuroscientist Dr. Stephen DeCosta, who asks, are there things that could suddenly destroy the Earth without warning and more or less instantly? If so, could you please itemize such things and bonus points for including rough likelihood of occurrence? Thank you.
Well, okay, we need to consider a few things, but having in mind that we're focusing on the Earth allows to make a certain assumption that will make our discussion easier. If it was a generic planet, things would be a little bit different. But I think I can give good estimates about the Earth. In general, it's very difficult to completely annihilate a planet. Destroying its surface, very easy in cosmic terms. You can have big asteroids, you can have volcanism, you can have intelligent civilization that decide to run the environment and the climate into the ground.
Ouch.
Yes. But to completely destroy, completely annihilate a planet, you need to have
a Death Star.
A Death Star.
Yes.
So, but even that, this is why it's fascinating to think that in the Star Wars universe, realize just how powerful of a weapon that is. And they're just like, ooh, it takes a lot of energy for a little bit over-the-top effect.
Well, I mean, I don't think you can destroy a planet and it not be over-the-top.
Yes, but if you want to threaten 10,000 planets, you don't need a weapon that completely pulverizes a planet. You need a weapon that just destroy the surface, kill any living being on it, something like that. But let's not
get too happy.
Or no, let's not get on a tangent like we always do. So, the complete annihilation of our planet is an extremely remote possibility for two connected reasons. As I said, planets are much sturdier than we might realize. And things that could destroy the planet are very, very rare.
Thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully. Otherwise, most likely we wouldn't be here. So the gravitational binding energy of the Earth is 2 × 10^32 joule. To give you a comparison, because that is just a big number with no meaning otherwise, it's about the total energy the sun produces over 9 days would be necessary to just rip the Earth apart.
Wow.
So, planets are sturdy.
Okay.
But Steve has asked for instantaneous. So we need something that can deliver that amount of energy.
In a quick blast.
In a quick blast.
I know where you're going.
Where am I going, Christopher?
Supernova.
Supernova. Supernova is certainly first one up. A supernova, certainly the energy to rip our planet to smithereen. But how close must it be? At the point of ejection, the material released by a supernova moves at 30,000 km per second. That is 10% of the speed of light. That is definitely enough to pulverize anything in the solar system. But the sun is not going to be a supernova.
It's going to be a red giant.
Yes, spoilers for future episodes. The sun is never going to turn supernova, so we need to look at nearby stars. The Crab Nebula is probably the most famous supernova remnant. It's gorgeous, and the supernova that caused it was recorded in China in 1054 CE. And the material, after almost 1,000 years, is expanding at 1,500 kilometers per second. Still enough to erode the planet pretty quickly. You know, dust to dust, ashes to ashes. But the edge of that nebula is only 5 light years from where the supernova exploded, from the center. We could see the apocalypse coming quite a way off.
Yeah.
But also, there are no stars that could go supernova within 600 light years.
What about Proxima Centauri?
Proxima Centauri is a red dwarf, so it's even smaller than the sun. So it's definitely not going to go supernova. What is the closest super red giant to Earth, Christopher? Or all our lovely listener, please scream the answer if you know it.
Shall I say it 3 times?
You can say it 3 times.
Betelgeuse.
Yes, it's Betelgeuse.
But no, I'm not going to say it, just in case.
Yeah. All right. So,
is that classed as a niche joke now? I hope not.
Probably not. The likelihood that we, in the very near future, because obviously the sun is moving around the Milky Way, a lot of other stars, so we might encounter at some point in the far distant future, being close enough to a supernova exploding.
But it's far away enough to not damage us.
The likelihood of this scenario, ballpark figure, it's probably around 1 in trillion.
Oh, okay, that's fine then.
So,
I'll take those odds.
Okay. What next? What can destroy our planet?
Okay, so this is a good time for me to jump in with something that I thought at the start when you were talking about meteors or asteroids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How big do asteroids actually get? Because I'm thinking even the what was it, Chicxulub? Is that how you say the
Chicxulub?
Chicxulub. The dinosaur killer.
Yes.
That one. I mean, that was what, like 10 kilometers wide?
I think it was.
So, I mean, it was pretty massive. Yeah. Because even that destroyed a lot of life on Earth and kind of blacked out the sun with the amount of debris it threw up into the atmosphere. But it only dented tiny little nymph in the surface of the Earth. So how big can they get? I don't want to derail the entire episode, so be as fast as you want with this. How big can meteors technically get? And could they destroy, like, can you have, like, planet-sized? No, because that would probably be a planet. Can you have ones that are massive enough to actually smash a planet into pieces like that?
Actually, there's no upper limit in the size. The biggest asteroid in the solar system is Ceres, which is now classified as a dwarf planet, and is 930 kilometers in diameter. Don't remember the exact number, but it's...
So if Ceres, for some reason, spontaneously decided to smash into Earth, would that be enough to obliterate the Earth?
No.
What?
Do you remember how the moon formed?
Oh.
Sorry, that made it feel like you were there when the moon formed.
Don't you remember those times I was there, Gandalf? No, I don't remember how the moon was formed. I'm going to guess it was some big... Wait, hang on. Wasn't it a rock from Mars smashed into Earth? And
a rock? That...
A chunk of Mars.
No, but the Mars thing, it's good.
Broke a bit off the Earth? No, maybe it was like debris from Earth, sort of then. I don't know, you tell me.
No, but you see, it is fascinating to see how Chris memorized things and what leaves an impression. No, it's wonderful because your connection with Mars is that Earth was hit by a planetoid the size of Mars.
Oh, that's where I got the Mars connection. Yeah. Okay.
And this cataclysmic impact didn't destroy the Earth, but threw enough material into space, half of it fall back down on Earth, and half turn into the Moon.
Okay.
Even that, even hitting our planet with something the size of Mars, didn't destroy it.
What if it just wasn't going fast enough?
Okay, but you need the right condition to for something to get to that speed, and you would not find them in the solar system with those kind of odds.
Okay.
But, spoilers, because I'm going to touch on those potential odds.
Okay.
So, if it's not a supernova, what is the first thing that could pop into your mind that could destroy our planet completely?
Nukes? No, okay.
No, sweetie, we're still thinking in cosmic terms.
But I've already thought, like, meteor and supernova were my only two things.
Is there nothing in the universe that it's...
aliens?
No.
Oh.
Something that we know they exist, and it's usually seen as...
black holes!
Black holes! Oh, there we got there in the end.
Okay. Forgot about those.
Black holes. Assuming that all the stars in the Milky Way disk are evenly spaced, which are not because we have the spiral arms, but let's go with it. And we are an average galaxy in terms of stars, there should be about a million black holes just going around, not bothering anyone.
Doing their own thing.
Doing nothing, at least not eating, because if they were eating, we would see their signature.
Okay.
Because the way we spot black holes...
they just exist.
They exist. They're not bothering anyone.
Not a phone in sight.
Not a phone in sight. Just black holes living in the moment. If that is the case, there should be roughly one of these million black holes every 125 light years. How likely is that we can encounter these black holes? Remember that black holes, despite being quite massive, and here we're talking about solar size, so between 8, I don't know, 100 times the mass of the sun, they're still really, really small. They would be between island size to continent size, probably. Like, they would be really small. And so the chance to find them, the chance that not only they pass near the solar system, but they manage to hit Earth, it's tiny. I would say the upper limit is around 2 in a billion billion, just based on my calculations.
So that's very good odds for that not happening.
Mm-hmm.
If it were to happen, how fast would the Earth be annihilated? Would it be instantaneous, or would it sort of gently go towards this black hole and it would just...
No, the moment the black hole is near enough, the Earth will be completely ripped apart. Wow. I think we discussed last season about spaghettification and what it's like to jump into a black hole. So, yeah. Would be that on a planetary scale.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, before we get to Earth getting destroyed by a planet, how about if another star hit us? That could lead to two things. You could have the star hitting the sun, and that could turn supernova, or the star hitting the Earth. And that could happen even if it was a smaller star. So I'm going with that case just because it's slightly more likely.
Okay.
Simply because smaller stars, like red dwarfs, are more common than a bigger star that could turn the sun into supernova.
Is this something that there is a shred of a chance occurring during the Andromeda merger?
No. Again, all these chances and all my upper limits are literally just saying, imagine that all of these objects in the Milky Way act like billiard balls, and they're just going around and eventually cross path at the wrong possible moment. You need to consider there is gravitational interaction, there is a lot more. So I'm pretty much saying, okay, if we have an idealized case, and I can do some quick maths, this is the chance. Probably it's way less likely. And also, if it's more likely and it happens, we'll all be dead, so nobody can blame me for getting the number wrong. The Milky Way has an idealized star density of about 0.02 star per cubic light year.
I can't even picture that.
This is why maths is easier in this case than trying to picture.
Yeah, you can see vast, the numbers.
Not only is vast distance, it's vast volume in space. And what does it mean? So what is the chance of a collision higher than a collision with a black hole? But still quite small in my idealized case. It's about 7.5 in 100 trillionth.
Wow.
Slightly more than 10,000 times more likely than a black hole. But still, very...
A little bit unlikely still.
And finally is a planet. And again, This is a bit of a cheat because...
As in a planet crashing into Earth?
Yeah. So there's nothing in the solar system that can do that, but what about a rogue planet? Rogue planets are those planets that we believe exist between stars. Unbounded.
Ones that aren't in a solar system.
No, that's why they're rogue.
Ooh, I like this.
If the estimates for these objects are true, there should be twice as many of these rogue planets than stars in the Milky Way.
Ooh. That was a weird noise. Okay, trying to picture that. I would have thought that stars would be the more abundant, but I suppose now I think about it, there are obviously going to be more planets than stars.
And we think every star has planets, or at least every star forms planet when it forms.
Cool.
So stars can lose their planets. And
oh, so rogue planets wouldn't have just formed out of nothing. They would have... Obviously, they're not going to form out of nothing.
But no, they don't just form on their own. They form around...
Stars can lose planets.
Stars can lose planets.
Interesting.
I would put the likelihood of a rogue planet hitting Earth, although, sorry Steve, that's a bit of a cheat, that it's not complete annihilation, to about twice the likelihood of a star hitting Earth.
Twice the likelihood of a star hitting Earth. But I suppose if a planet did hit Earth, then it could destroy it instantly.
Yes, but Steve specifically said utter annihilation, complete annihilation.
Yeah,
The fact that at that point, if you need to wait for a rogue planet, the moment I'm picturing Steve just having a little master plan of villainy on how to destroy Earth.
It was a very specific question.
Yes.
Fed up of physical distancing.
Yes, I guess so.
Enough
with the lockdown. Let's destroy everything. I hope that answered the question.
Wasn't there something actually quite recently about a planet that had been destroyed?
Yes, there was. Are you talking about the Oumuamua formation theory?
Yes, the not alien spacecraft.
Definitely, definitely, definitely not alien spacecraft. Oumuamua, if you're not familiar, is the first interstellar object discovered in the solar system.
It's a visitor.
It's a visitor from another star system.
That's so cool.
So Oumuamua is a fascinating object. First of all, we were expecting comets to be the first interstellar visitor that we could observe because they are more luminous, and usually comets form at the edges of a star system, so they can be lost more easily because they are less tightly bound. And we found an interstellar comet, Comet Borisov, that just recently started breaking apart after it passed through the solar system. Oumuamua, instead, was quite the peculiar thing. First of all, it's very weird shape, a little bit like a cigar. It's very long and thin.
A space sausage.
Yeah, but also it rotates in a weird way, and he had something that is called a non-gravitational acceleration. Now, that's where people, even famous researchers, which are my
Your nemesis.
My nemesis.
Your nemesises.
Yeah, my nemesises.
Nemesi?
I have discussed... No, I think it's Greek, so... I've discussed what is this non-gravitational acceleration. Pretty much you work out how much it should accelerate by getting closer to the sun and then moving away. And what day it appeared, it was going faster. But since it wasn't a comet, but since it didn't form an atmosphere, didn't have a coma, as it's technically called, for a comet, or a tail, we couldn't work out how that acceleration was happening. So for a comet, it would be the evaporation, the release of material that would produce that non-gravitational acceleration.
Could it have been knocked?
No, no, no. It needs to be intrinsic. The issue was to understand all these peculiar properties, and researchers have recently worked out a scenario, a formation scenario for Oumuamua that explains everything. We don't know for certain, but it's a fascinating theory and has a really good prediction. So the idea is that the parent body of Oumuamua was either a planet or a planetoid or a large asteroid that got too close to its star or its white dwarf. It also would work around a white dwarf. What happened is that the planet, the planetoid, the asteroid was completely destroyed. And it was so close that the material was stretched. So the fragment, this shard of a shattered planet, were stretched into what will become Oumuamua. But also, was not only stretched, but it was also baked. So the surface of this asteroid was baked. But they worked out that material inside this shard could still be rich in water and other volatiles. So when it got near enough our sun, it wasn't enough to form a coma, but it was enough to release some material from the deeper layer and give this non-gravitational acceleration. And so you explain the weird shape, the reason why it's rotating in a funny way, because...
I was going to ask how it escaped its own star, but I guess that's how.
Yeah, it's just that the shattering of the planet had just thrown all this material into space, and they estimate that a single planet could create something like 10,000 Oumuamua.
Wow.
Probably there are as many interstellar comets as there are interstellar asteroids, like Oumuamua. And their prediction, and this is why I like it, because we could soon find out if this idea is correct or not. If we see other interstellar objects, they should be looking like Oumuamua. So, weird shape, weird structure, they need to be planetary shards, rather than something more like, I don't know, like Sirius, which is quite round, or... asteroid like Vesta or Ida that are potato shape. They need to be something quite peculiar because asteroids tend to form closer to their stars and then need to be kicked out, because if they form very close to the star, they need to get really a good kick to be thrown into space.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing.
And I'm sorry, Steve, the Earth is in a very, very stable orbit, so it's not going to happen to all our planets. You cannot destroy Earth just by getting close to the sun. And you cannot even push Earth close to the sun.
Maybe don't challenge Steve that. I feel like he's on a bit of a mission with this question. Never know what he could do.
But if he becomes a supervillain with this plan, we have the sort of responsibility to stop him and... Imagine what that would do for, like, the listener of The Astrolic Explains. It's all good publicity.
Okay, well, nice try, Steve. And thank you, Al, for answering this apocalyptic question.
Thank you, Steve, for asking this fascinating, and I don't find it problematic, but some people might find it problematic question. And thank you very much for listening to The Astrolic Explains.
And this is it for another episode of The Astrolic Explains.
Follow us on social media at The Astroholic and feel free to send in more questions.